Welcome to the Leverage Ladies Podcast with Linda McKissick and Shannon Dagger. Each episode of this show, we will take on conversations about the biggest assets you have working for you, your team members. We will hear stories and conversations from successful business leaders, authors, and executives, and learn how they have used leverage to grow and expand to the next level. If you are looking to grow or expand your business, this is the show for you. Now, let's talk leverage.
Welcome to the Leverage Ladies. This is a podcast where we have inside conversations with top experts and business owners about their journey to finding leverage, growing their organization, and achieving work-life balance. These are perspectives and stories you will not hear anywhere else. We are your hosts, Linda McKissick and Shannon Dagger. We are business owners and business partners who've committed to leveraging our way to freedom so that we can achieve financial peace and have a life by design. As lifelong learners who run multiple organizations, we know that you can achieve more by focusing on building organizational support and leverage. To go along with these interviews each week, we are putting together a roadmap for you to follow along as you are implementing leverage into your business. Our speakers will be sharing documents and resources with you as well. Be sure to listen to the end every week to find out where you can find each week's piece of the roadmap. We highly encourage you to check out the resources. Now let's get started.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Leverage Ladies. I'm Linda McKissick. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about why it's important to have a process for when you're hiring leverage. So Shannon, my co-host, is with me here today. Shannon, you and I both have kind of used the same process for years, but let's talk about maybe when we didn't use a process. You got any great stories? I know I got a few.
Yeah, I've got some stories of when I just hired friends or family members that I thought they seemed like a great fit, and I didn't go through any process with them because I wanted to offer opportunity. And every single time I can say I regret it, not because they weren't great people, not because they weren't good at what they were good at, but because they weren't maybe the right fit for the job and the relationship wasn't established with the right boundaries. So now I'm very specific about following the process and not rushing the process, which can be exhausting at times. And there's always an urge to want to rush through, but I found that it really works for me. So how about you, Linda? What is your experience?
Well, I laugh because I always say when I first started hiring people, I would spend all the time talking about and selling them on why they should take the job. And I don't think they said two words in the whole process. And now I have a process where I say very, very, very little. And they say 99.9% of everything, because the more a person talks, the more you get to see who they are. It's so funny because I would get someone and they'd show up on Monday. And if I had other employees, they'd look at me like, who in the world hired this person? And what I did was I sold them on a role or a position with my organization, or sold them on myself, instead of really having a process that protected me and them, quite honestly. Me from getting someone who was not the right fit in a position, and them getting put in a position that they didn't behaviorally or task-oriented wise fit, right? And so I had to learn that to get someone to take a job that they didn't fit was definitely a disservice to them, because I don't want to do anything to someone. And I remember my daughter asked me one day, gosh, mom, isn't it hard to fire somebody? And I said, you know, it is, Bailey. It's uncomfortable. It's not fun. But why do you think you'd have to let someone go? And she said, well, I don't know, because she understands about behavioral assessments and different things. She said, well, maybe because they don't really fit the job that you have them in. I said, yeah, if I'm letting them go and I'm freeing them up to go find something they are good at and they do well, am I really doing something to someone or for someone? And she said, well, probably for someone. And so it's just changing your mindset and taking more caution on the front end, because that is such an important obligation and responsibility. To say, okay, now I better have a process that I can drop people into that takes my emotion out of it. I always say this, I always tend to fall in love with everybody and I want to fix them and I want to make them somehow fit. So the more space and time I put in between each interview with that person, the more I back off of those feelings and I give myself a chance to truly get to know the person and truly get to know if they're a fit in the role or not. So for me, a process saves me from me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's funny, Linda, because I have the same mindset and I've had that same conversation with my own daughter before about letting somebody go or making it. And I think that through hiring correctly, and sometimes that means correcting mistakes that we've made, I think we're opening doors and opportunities to people that give them a better world. It may not feel that way at the time when we're making a change, but I think that long term, you're giving them to find a place where they fit smoothly without abrasion and without tension, and they feel it too. It's not just you as the employer who feels bad about hire and a bad fit. The employee feels it too. And who wants to go into a place where we spend the majority of our day and not feel like this is your calling and your passion and your fit? And so I think by using a process, we allow ourselves to sit in that kind of like what you said, the quiet space, the white space of listening to them and to what our minds and our process is telling us.
And I think for a process, because I didn't have one before, it allows me to look for clues because zebras don't change their stripes, right? And yeah. So their past will usually predict their future. And so learning to have a process that allowed me, and before I would have never thought to look into someone's past other than, you know, you look at those stupid resumes and that tells you just about much of nothing, at least for me. But at least now I can know what I'm looking for when I look in someone's past. I can know what specific questions to ask around the particular role that I'm trying to put them in. I can really understand someone's heart and whether they're a victim or they're responsible. There's so many things that you need to look for before you hire someone that if you have a process, you don't have to remember all those things. You just follow the process and the process makes sure it hits all the important spots for you.
I agree with that. So let's start there. So let's talk about the process. What does the process look like for you, Linda?
Well, the first thing, and some of these things I'm making modifications as I move forward. On the front end, I'm trying to get more specific and clear of what the role is and who it fits in my ads on the front end. Because I've learned that I want to narrow the amount of people that come into the funnel to only people who look at that and go, gosh, that's my dream job. That sounds wonderful, right? Not that you won't get people that think that should be their dream job and it's not. So I start with that. And the first thing, honestly, is to sit down and have a missing person. What are you looking for? And I think this is where I've stumbled in the past, Shannon. I'm very quick start. I want to go and I want to go quickly. And in hiring, that's not good. You want to hire slow and hire fast, right? Learning to slow down and try to be as clear as I can because people can only help me to the extent I have clarity. I've learned that. And I've jumped into programs before. I bought online programs. I bought different things to do something. And because I didn't have clarity, they couldn't help me very much. Well, the same thing is here. The process isn't going to help me if I don't have clarity on the front end. And we call it a missing person report, which in later episodes, you and I are going to dive into each one of those processes that we use. I would say, it starts with that. And then the particular steps of the process. And one of them that's kind of unique that I had never thought of or done before is on our references going three deep. Got to ask permission.
Oh, I love it.
Let them know that you're going to do that. But of course, any smart person, the first people they're going to give you have to love them or they're going to be pretty stupid people if they give you people that don't love them, right? Maybe they're oblivious to it, but odds are first level they give you, they're going to love them. Second level you go to may tell you some more truths. And the third level will certainly tell you truths that the other two didn't tell you.
So I've only had one person in my career give me a list of references and it actually be that first call be bad. And I did actually have somebody who did that. And when I called, it was not a good reference. That was a pretty obvious red flag. We're not moving forward. If you can't get your reference sheet together, we're probably not a good match. But when we talk about going two and three levels deep, tell me what you mean specifically and how you handle that.
In our process, because we're following the same process, let them know in the form that they sign that on their references, we're going to call the people they give us, but we're going to also ask those people who they may know. So they've given us upfront permission to do that. Because a lot of times those frontline people, they're in HR, they're in something where they know they got to be careful what they say. But by the time you get to second or third, and I also have in the past, Shannon, try to think about who would these people be leading? Like in our market centers, if someone's going to be a team leader and they were on an ALC before, I want to know from other people, how did they lead as if they were on the agent leadership council, right? Or if they were in the office with other agents, I want to know from those other agents, how do they see them? Do they see them as a leader or do they see them not as a leader? Because if they were in their office and they don't see them as a leader, now I'm about to put them in a leadership role. Why is that? I just want to go contact as many people as I possible can that will give me as many angles and truths that I need to make sure I investigate before I put this person in a particular role.
Yeah. It's, hey, so thank you for talking to me about Linda. I'm glad you guys had a great experience because I want to get a total package and total awareness of all of the people that Linda affected. Do you know anybody else who might be able to give me a reference and speak to her?
else who might have worked with her or anyone else right. would be able to shed light on her skills or talents or whatever.
And that gives a whole different level of reference to the person that you're talking to. Yep. So we jumped ahead to references. I know we did that, but since you mentioned it, I wanted to dive in there. So where is it that you start the interview process? So we've got the job description, right? And I'm going to jump back. I had a question for you on this. So what I'm finding with job descriptions lately is that at CyberWreckers, in the virtual world, we're hiring to meet clients' needs. And a lot of times clients will call and we're doing a job description. We go through the needs analysis. And they just have this bucket load of things that they need done. So 30, 40 things that they need done, which really is more than any one person could do. But they want to include it just to include it. And so sometimes we find that it's hard to measure success when we've included that many things on there, or we're setting an employee up for success. So I've kind of gotten to where we've narrowed down the list of things on there into what we call more of a one sheet at this point. And that's what we look for a candidate is a one sheet of these are very specific, measurable, achievable tasks that mm-hmm. we can put on this list that can be accomplished in a certain period of time. And then we will upskill and level up. How are you doing your job descriptions?
Yeah, that's a great point. I definitely have that problem sometimes. And I've learned over the years that actually the more narrow focus somebody can have and it's their unique ability, honestly, the better results you're going to have overall. So I went from, and I'm still working on this for myself. I went from trying to get them to be the jack of all trades and putting too many different things on one person and expecting them to be good at all of them to I'm more interested in trying to fit them into a role that is fewer tasks that are their great gift and unique ability that they do better than anybody else. So that is to me the biggest change that's happened over time for me.
I love that. I love how much you focus on unique abilities and gifts. I think that is such a great way to put it and a recipe for success. So after you've gotten your job description done, you put an ad out, you get resumes in. What are you doing next? What's that look like?
Then the next is like an interview process that happens over the phone, which I think is a great first step because you can rule out a lot of people by how they talk on the phone, their professionalism, that kind of stuff. To me, I'm all about trying to save time. And I might even have other people do this, and then I'm going to step in on some other of the steps that's more important. But no matter who's doing the interview process, to me, a phone interview is the very first.
You use leverage to hire leverage.
Yeah. I'll bring people in if I feel like somebody else has a better eye for this type of role, or if I'm conflicted, I'll bring another set of eyes in, more sets of eyes in, and say, would you tell me what you see in this person? Could you see them in this role? I mean, I will really lean on other people to help me try to make sure as much as possible that I'm doing this correctly.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I'll take the resume and I have a background in human resources. So I'll share my tips from that as well. They're a little different than what you might get in some of the processes. I never write on a resume. I use sticky notes and I put them all over the resume. That's something that was a little CYA that we learned in school. Always put your sticky notes on your resumes instead of writing directly on them. So I put sticky notes all over and I highlight the areas in which I am impressed by the actual results. So I'm looking for results-based resumes as well, not just experience, because I think I'm looking for them to start talking action really early on. And then I will make the phone call. And I do think that there's a miss with a lot of employers. They don't make the phone call. They send out a personality test before they ever even talk to the person. That's something that I think is really important to have that initial conversation and kind of set the expectation for, I'm going to send you a job assessment next. And here's what it looks like.
Okay. I'm kind of curious. What do the sticky notes do?
So it's kind of like we're bound by all sorts of laws as a real estate agent, and fair housing laws and things like that. And so sometimes they'll say, be careful with writing on MLS sheets and things like that. It's kind of the same thing for a resume. You just shouldn't write on the resume specifically because for posterity, it's always there. So I put everything on the sticky note. That's just me. I was taught that. That's the way I was taught in school, is not to write on things, to put them on a sticky note and put them on the resume so that you have it and your resume stays clean. And we're subject to audits as employers. Somebody can come in and pull all of those resumes and review them. So just a training standpoint, most small employers aren't subject to any of those kind of things. But as we grow, wanting to have a long vision, best practice.
Gotcha. What would you say is the next step?
Do you send a personality assessment before, after you make the phone call?
Phone call first, because I could save the personality assessment.
And don't you think that if you have the phone call too and the personality assessment comes out slightly different, it kind of gives you a feel in evaluating it as well.
Yeah, it would definitely be a point that you could say, does this feel like it matches? Like a direct person will use certain languages. I could listen for those cues, that's for sure.
I had this interview one time for a director of first impressions for an office, and I called her, she's super bubbly, like outgoing and just off the top. And her personality assessment came back that she was kind of introverted. I thought that was really strange. So when I brought her into the office anyway, and when I met with her, she was, again, super bubbly in person, super, super bubbly. And I asked her about it, and she had taken the personality assessment. And I said, did something happen when you took this? And she was like, oh, well, my son was running around the room and it was late. I'm sorry. I was trying to get it done for you. And the dog was barking. And I was like, okay, well, that's why you were distracted. So I think having that conversation gave me kind of that validation that I could ask the question and see if it was off.
What I love about the behavioral assessments and the way our process calls for us to do it is it allows you to give them a chance to let you know that it's not correct. And then one of my favorite things to do is when they say something is not correct, ask for a specific example of how that's not correct, because 9 times out of 10, people cannot give you a specific example. And when they stop and think about it, they'll go, well, actually, after I think about it, I guess that is me. So you can, what we call, validate it and verify it, and gives them a chance to let you know that it isn't correct. But then you get to verify whether you feel that that's accurate or not.
Rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. And all the time I get people who are like, I don't think so. Maybe a 6 or 7. And I'm like, well, tell me how that's not accurate. Give me an example. And they're like, no, maybe it's an 8 or a 9. Exactly what you said. Like, there's no example.
Yeah. Or you say, well, what's missing to make it a 10? They go, well, in some situations I do this, but I've learned over the years that that's probably not good. So I'm better at not doing that now. That changes it also.
So what do you do next? Coach, personality assessment. You had your phone call.
Yep. You owe them a chance to validate and verify whether the assessment is correct anytime you give anybody any kind of assessment. Otherwise, it feels punitive, or they always are wondering, well, I wonder, did I not pass? They see it as pass and fail, even though it's not. You owe that to a person if you do that for them. Then there's a thought process that has a bunch of questions. You ask those questions and see how they answer certain questions, and you pay attention to what those answers are. The thought process questions you could add as someone doesn't work out in a role, you could go back and say, I need to add this question to my thought process. Anyway, it just gives you a chance to really go in deeper on some of their answers and how they answer them, right? Like one of them questions is, how long would you be willing to fail at something before you succeed? You're looking at for tenacity, or how do they handle when something's not working out? Then we have a process that's called the life story, which I love because, again, that zebras don't change their stripes, and success and failure leaves clues. So it's going back in their life and trying to figure out what their trajectory has been, what their responsibilities have been, kind of what's their trajectory been in their life to tell you kind of where they're headed. Are they flatlined or whatever? And so I love that one. It's one of my favorite parts. Plus, I think it gives you a chance to look for whether someone's a victim in their language, or they blame other people for what's happened to them. They give you their life story. So usually there's emotional stuff in that. You learn a lot about their hardships.
I find that's when you find, as a potential employer, that you become really invested in them because you know what they've gone through. It's definitely a win-win because they get to share and you want to understand where they're coming from. And then the next part being, we do a motivational interview. We want to dive into that motivation and we understand where they've come from. And now we understand their motivation and what motivates them to work, that we're really invested in that process.
Yeah. And I love the motivational interview also because you want people who are motivated and want things so that they can connect the dots between, my success here is going to move me closer to these things that motivate me in the first place. And you want to make sure that it's a match. I mean, I've done the motivational interview on people before and found out that they would rather be a missionary. That's fantastic. You just help them discover, I don't know what I'm doing here because I really want to be on the mission field. Okay, well, good. Let's put a plan together. How do we help you get there? What's your next step to go that direction? I always say God's a better recruiter than I am. So when I hear that, I'm like, okay, God, you win.
Point taken.
I'm not even going to battle this one. And then number 8 is a group interview and references. And this is where if you've got other people they're going to be working with, they get a chance to come in and talk to this person and maybe help you see blind spots or things that you might not be able to see. And then, of course, the references, we've already talked about going 3 deep on those.
Yeah, I think the group interview, the references, and then what we call the defense is like poking a hole into why you're choosing to move forward with this person, making sure that you haven't just pick somebody who's just like you and not seeing any of the other things and saying, well, have you thought about this? And making sure with you that you've thought about all of the things as if this is the person you're going to hire. And have you thought about how you're going to deal with these things? Because no one person's going to be perfect for any position. So there's going to be considerations of where does this person fit and how do they fit there? And where is there maybe not a perfect alignment? And have we thought about that? So the defense is, I think, super important as well. I get asked this when we talk about this, like, do you really do this all the time? Yeah. Every time I have ever not done this whole process from reviewing the resume and the job description to the KPA to the references and through the multiple interviews, every single time I have not done them or I have seen them rush, it always turns out to be a mistake. And so, yeah, I think even if you don't have a team that you're working with or you're just a solo entrepreneur, you need to bring in other people to kind of help you with this so that you can make a really solid hire, because your most expense for a business and your biggest asset is your employees. So doing it right the first time is really important.
Yeah. And if you've done 8 steps with them, yes, we talked about how bonding this process is for them, but it's also bonding for you. So you're going to start to have blind spots and you're going to start to be bought into this person, maybe to the level where somebody else bringing up something will help you see something that you've gotten blinded to.
I agree.
And then number 10 is the expectation conversation. And that's where you just get on the same page. What do you feel you have the right to expect from you? What do I feel I have the right to expect from you? In other words, what do you feel you have the right to expect from me as your employer? And what do I feel I have the right to expect you as my employee? And honestly, there's another one that I have gotten from Strategic Coach that I like that's similar to this that you can do even after they start working. And it's kind of the things that they're responsible for advancing and maybe saving money or different things is the top 2 quadrants, which has to do with their particular role. And the bottom 2 are, what are the things that drive me crazy? And how do you be a hero? Because everybody wants to be a hero and nobody wants to drive you crazy.
Yes.
So I love those a little bit better even to bring in later, even after you've done expectations, because there's something about expectation conversations that you have on the front end and then you don't bring them back up. Called a 4x4. And really it talks to the top 2 is, what is your particular responsibilities in your role? And then the bottom 2 is, here's how you become a hero in that role. And then here's how you drive me crazy. And I love that to add to it. It's not part of our particular process that we learned from our company, but I love it. And I've added it since I learned it.
Need to make sure that we upload something on that to our website.
With something like that, they have to just Google and see if Dan has it out there available. Okay. Now that we have the liberty to put it out there, but they can Google 4x4 by Dan Sullivan and see if it comes up.
That's perfect.
And then final is just make an offer, right? Make an offer to that person to take the position in the role.
Yep. We'll upload some sample offers and letters for you to go through. I do think going back to the expectations conversation and the offer, when it's accepted, so many people do put that aside. And, you know, we have the expectations conversation and yet we're not revisiting it. So setting the time to revisit right then and there and blocking calendars and time blocking for those conversations to happen and to assess, that's probably one of the keys to success. If you've gone through this whole process, is really checking in with your person and having a great onboarding process. And we've talked about that quite a bit. And we'll do some more episodes diving deeper into all of these things and going through the whole process in detail in a future episode. So this is great. Anything else you want to add, Linda?
I was just thinking about the 4x4, just to give people an example. One of the things I always put in my 4x4s that just drives me crazy, if you want an example so that you could be thinking about yours, is that when we're working on a project or something and I'm not hearing what's going on with it, I make up a story, which in absence of communication, everybody makes up a story, right? So my story is either it's in a black hole and nothing's happening, or there's a problem. And if there is a problem, I'm the person you need to bring it to because that's my unique ability, right? A lot of times, things are happening, but they're not communicating to you that they're happening. So I just put that in. The things that drive me crazy is for things to fall into a black hole because I'll either make up a story that's not getting done or there's a problem. And either one, I need to know, you know, because if it's a problem, I'm a great problem solver.
I think the accountability piece of it is huge, especially when we're talking about virtual leverage, that you don't have a person sitting in the office next to you that's giving you feedback all the time. And so if you're looking at somebody who's virtual to hire on your team, the accountability piece is super, super important. And that's part of why you need to schedule that out, is so that you don't sit there and wonder what has happened with this. And we get that a lot in terms of conversation. And so you should be getting a daily report when it's virtual. You should get a daily report, but also you should schedule those follow-ups so that you can get information, but you need to set the expectation expectations are not just about performance, it's also about communication. And that's what you were talking about. This is how I expect to be communicated with. And this is the frequency and the depth and the breadth and all of that that needs to come. Yeah.
Well, good conversation today on the importance of using a process and kind of a outline of the process that we use. Like you said earlier, we'll go into detail on each of these in a later episode. But great conversation today, Shannon, and great conversation always around leverage. And I'll talk to you next time. Thank you for listening today. Don't forget to visit our website and download this week's piece of your leverage roadmap at leverageladies.com. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to and share this Leverage Ladies podcast with others. We would love to have you follow us on social media as well. Check out our Facebook and Instagram pages and be sure to follow us for ongoing tips, updates, and information. Remember, the greatest compliment you can give us is to leave a 5-star review so that others are able to find the Leverage Ladies podcast. And again, thanks for listening.
This podcast is sponsored by Cyberbackers Ohio Valley Region Franchise. Did you know Cyberbackers provides leverage to you with highly trained and skilled virtual assistants? Our virtual assistants work one-on-one with you, and we do the job and personality assessments for you, so you have all the information you need to make a great hiring decision. Check us out at cyberbackers.com for more information. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Leverage Ladies podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and we hope to catch you again in the next episode of the Leverage Ladies podcast. We'll see you then.